Not all of the ghosts at the White House are former presidents. I'm sure you've heard the tales of Abraham Lincoln, for example, pacing his old bedroom. I think actually Winston Churchill even claims to have seen Lincoln once while naked as a jaybird in one of his signature baths. In case you don't know that, Winston Churchill was notorious for smoking cigars in his bathtub, sometimes with people in the room taking his notes. Ghostly accounts abound at the White House, so many that if you run a Google search, it honestly seems like overkill. There's a white-haired man that supposedly kept Chester Arthur up at night. A woman in an ethereal white gown floats and paces in patterns in the old conservatory. Supposedly, Anna Surratt bangs on the doors of the White House, pleading to see Andrew Johnson, there to beg for a pardon for her mother, Lincoln assassination conspirator Mary Surratt. In 1883, Washington newspapers actually reported on a phosphorescent old man, a ghost, on the second floor with a white beard and shining eyes and long, scrawny fingers to boot. And in 1911, members of the Taft administration were traumatized by an entity named in internal memos as simply the Thing. Inexplicably, most accounts actually report that the White House domestic staff thought it to be the ghost of a 14-year-old boy and not a thing. How do we know about the thing at all? Well, one of our main sources, letters written by a Taft aide whose name you will recognize, Titanic victim Archibald Butt, ordered by Taft at one point to make sure the staff was kept hush-hush about this thing. Happy Halloween. I'm LA Beatles, and this is Unsinkable, the Titanic podcast, Halloween Day edition. This is the story of Archie and the ghost. As always, I want to start by thanking my newest Patreon members. So thank you to the newest Unsinkable VIPs. Thank you, Catherine Pryor. Thank you, Amy V. And thank you, Jennifer Carter. Never fails, even 2 years in, to make me do my happy dance. It 2 years in still blows my mind that you guys actively support the pod this way. It means so much. So thank you. And really quickly, I have noticed some of you have already taken advantage of this, but there is on Patreon a free follow feature now where you can create an account and follow along on the Patreon page without joining. You don't get any of the bonus content, but you do get to see when I make posts to sort of see a preview, titles of bonus episodes. I think some announcements are viewable on the free follow, but not any of the perks or actual features that you do have to sign up for one of the tiers for. But it does help me get a sense of who's following along. So thank you so much for taking advantage of that as well. Now, moving forward, I am going to be moving the sort of housekeeping bits of the podcast to the end of it, not Patreon. Thank you, sir. Patreon will always come first. But no one said anything. I just started to feel like that time at the beginning of the pod is getting a little bit long. And instead of jumping into the content you're actually here for, I was just, you know, rambling for 5 or 10 minutes about merchandise, which is not what you're here for. That's not what anyone wants when they sit down to listen to an episode of a podcast that they like. So I'll be moving that to the back end of the episode. So Archibald Butt and this story that you probably didn't know existed, because I certainly didn't. And I want to give a special thank you to my the source of my discovery of this even existing. And that is the podcast Hometown Ghost Stories. Now it's Halloween, so it's a perfect time to recommend this podcast to you. And in my journey of trying to remember podcast recommendations in at least every other episode or so, this is a huge one. So I discovered this one a few weeks ago when it turned into October, and I actually live somewhere now with a real October and the leaves have been changing and it feels like fall and it's cool. So I wanted a new spooky season podcast and I stumbled upon it. Now, to be perfectly honest, at first listen, first 5 or 10 minutes, I was a little skeptical. It's three men that can sound a little bro-y at times, to be frank, but I realized first impression was totally wrong, because what they are is actually really invested in what they're doing. And they research haunted places, legends. They actually go to some of them. They're very dedicated. They actually make kind of field trips and recordings at some of the places. But they talk about haunted spaces and places all over the country, all over the world. And they give some background. And then the three of them discuss. They're very curious skeptics, which is what I like to call myself. It's just a really fun and interesting discussion with a little bit of humor of, you know, hauntings and the specifics of them and could they be real? They do a series on celebrity hauntings where celebrities have been seen after their death. They do a side series on cursed objects. But long story short, they, in one of their episodes, were mentioning White House ghost stories. They mentioned this one and happened to say, oh, the aide in the Taft White House that wrote about the thing was Archibald Butt. And I don't think that they know Archibald Butt was on the Titanic because one of the hosts is always mentioning Titanic. And so I need to message them and see if they want to come on my show or vice versa. But I don't think they knew that because I think they would have spoken up and said that if they did. So anyway, thank you, Hometown Ghost Stories. Randomly heard this and realized there was this story to tell that's Titanic related and Halloween related. And if you're into spooky things, give it a listen. It's definitely not for kids. It's definitely a little darker and language heavy. Definitely a lot of triggering things can be mentioned. So not for kiddos. So there you go. Kind of a podcast recommendation worked in there. So if you need a quick refresher about Archibald Butt, or if you haven't listened to my full episode on him from last season, he was a distinguished American military officer and a diplomat. He held a lot of significant positions, including a role as a military aide to both Presidents Theodore Roosevelt and William Howard Taft. His contributions extended beyond his military service. He played a crucial role in facilitating diplomatic relations with the United States and various Latin American countries. He died on Titanic as a first-class passenger alongside his longtime friend and roommate, renowned artist Frank Millet, who many believe may have actually been his life partner, or at least a romantic partner. He was in Europe treating some amount of melancholia, encouraged by Taft and Millet and other friends to relax, but seemingly hadn't been able to. He is remembered by other first-class diners the night of the sinking for his kind of just at the surface, right there, pooling anxiety. He was a master entertainer. He was a lover of fine food. He apparently was the snazziest of snazzy dressers in Washington, D.C., but none of this part of him seemed to show on his face April 14th. He is memorialized alongside Millet with a fountain on the White House property. And their relationship and friendship is so important. His career is so important. There are some nuances about his role not just in the sinking, but politically and where he was from. So if you're interested in Butt at all, such a nuanced story. I'm very proud of that episode. So definitely roll back and listen to that if you have time. President Taft was near the end of his term when the thing showed up. And Archie comes into this picture of the thing. A little background on Taft, a little U.S. History 101 refresher of sorts. He was the 27th president of the United States. He was also the 10th chief justice. Now, he is the only man to have ever served both positions. He was born in 1857 in Cincinnati, Ohio. His father, Alfonso, was a U.S. Attorney General and a Secretary of War. This was all in his blood, I suppose. But no one ever mentions the mothers of famous men. So let's break that cycle as much as we can. Let's do it now. Listen to this. His mother, Taft's mother, was Louise Torrey. From 1846 to 1858, she published the Yale Gallinipper, a quote unquote scathingly satirical, that part's according to Wikipedia, just to be clear, Yale newspaper. Now, she published this alongside Olivia Day and Henrietta Blake, who was a descendant of Eli Whitney, to note. They wrote not openly as women. They were using pseudonyms. They were pretending to be three brothers who were undergraduates at Yale University. So it was this satirical, biting commentary, like criticisms of Yale, its students, its faculty, and they were publishing this. So I don't know, she sounds like kind of a badass, especially at this point in just the mid-19th century. Because women weren't supposed to talk most of the time, let alone have scathing analyses of things. To top it all off, she lived to be 90. So go Louise, I say. And I mean, I don't know much else about her, but go Louise. So Taft went to Yale himself, unshockingly, and he joined the Skull and Bone Society, of which his father, Alfonso, was actually a founding member. You've probably heard of it. It's the undergraduate secret society at Yale. And it's the oldest one at the university, I believe, that is for seniors. It's a cultural touchstone. It's a reference point. There's been movies made about it. There are conspiracy theories. There's several big, you know, societies at Yale, secret societies, but it's probably the most known one. I always think of in the Great Gatsby from 2013. Nick Carraway, I'm a Great Gatsby person, so I don't know if I've ever mentioned that. It's one of the only books in the world I've read several times. But there's this exchange between Tom Buchanan and Nick Carraway that leads you to believe they were in the Skull and Bones together. I think they say New Haven. So I think it's heavily implied. And there's these, you know, rumors and conspiracy theories about being a branch of the Illuminati. I'm not going down that road today. No. So Taft became a lawyer, then a judge, moving quickly within his profession thanks to ambition, massive intelligence, obviously, and a good old-fashioned dose of patriarchy and, I'm sure, nepotism, let's be honest. He served as Solicitor General and judge of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. In 1901, President McKinley appointed him civil governor of the Philippines. In 1904, President Roosevelt, and this would have been Theodore, of course, made him Secretary of War. So in 1908, it was a relatively smooth slide into the presidency on the Republican ticket. But within the party, there was a nagging and growing conflict between a more conservative branch, where Taft really lay, and a more progressive branch, which Roosevelt was sort of the head of. And Roosevelt would, and this is way oversimplifying some very important American history, so forgive me for, you know, what's the word? When you sum things up too concisely, I think sometimes you do a political or historical process so much disservice by condensing it down. And I hate that I'm not able to go into more detail, but that's not really what we're here for today. So Roosevelt would famously go try for the presidency again in 1912. There's not really like a lot of precedent for that. It's very interesting. But that would make the Republican vote split between Taft and Roosevelt. And that allowed Woodrow Wilson to become president at that point. But in the summer of 1911, none of that had happened yet. And Taft was in the White House. And Archibald Butt worked as his personal aide, his attaché, his personal secretary. They were intimately connected in these roles. And when word began to spread that an apparition was pestering servants in the White House, he, Taft, turned to Butt for support, but also for secrecy. "My dear Clara," Archie wrote in the summer of 1911, and this is to his sister, Clara, quote, "it seems that the White House is haunted," unquote. So it's really the main record that we have for this ghost of the White House known as the Thing, the letters that Archie wrote to his sister in the summer of 1911. A lot of the rest of the evidence is very anecdotal. There's certainly nothing documented about the thing. Of course, some people would argue that that's because obviously Taft was trying to cover up any evidence of this haunting at the White House, so that was successful. But if you're more skeptical, then you might say, no evidence, you know. According to the reports at the time, the thing was felt, seen sometimes, but more felt. Taft's housekeeper, quote, a spooky little thing herself, as Archie put it, she said that servants were coming to her with stories of feeling the thing appear, pressure on their shoulder, almost as if a child was leaning over you to see what you're doing. Reading that description triggered me in this very specific way as a parent because, and if you have small kids, young kids, you may know what I'm talking about, but they just, you know, they're always pressing on you to like, look at what you're looking at, look at what you're doing over your shoulder, sneaking up on you, which I love with all of my heart, but it's also, it's a very specific feeling that I think you have to be a parent to be okay with someone doing that to you. But that's what they were feeling, is that pressure. But apparently just, you know, tried to cut this sort of off at the head and said to the housekeeper, quote, ghosts have not the sense of touch, or at least those self-respecting ghosts of which I have heard. So he's writing to his sister saying, you know, I've told the housekeeper this is impossible. But before we go on with any more analysis of any of this, who was this spooky little thing that Archie speaks of? That's a person he's referring to. Again, gotta pull up the women in these stories so they're not just throwaway lines or mothers. Her name was Elizabeth Jaffrey, and she has actually a fair amount of information available about her. She was apparently recruited from a very exclusive New York employment bureau and became the first female chief servant in White House history. Kind of a big deal. So according to, she's known for something very specific about Taft, which is when I went searching for her online, it was like most of the hits. So according to the White House Historical Association, pretty legit source there, she was quoted, Jaffrey was, regarding Taft's growing girth while he was president. So in a book that was released in the 1920s that included sort of some of the secrets of the White House being revealed. In fact, I think the book is called Secrets of the White House. She laid out what was a typical breakfast that Taft would eat at this time in his career. And I think he was a rotund man. he was known for eating, quote unquote, 2 oranges, 12-ounce beefsteak, several pieces of toast and butter, vast quantity of coffee with cream and sugar. So she apparently was very concerned as the head servant with his diet and tried to convince him to cut back. It's just such a strange thing that that's one of the main things this woman is known for. I mean, she was the first female chief servant in the White House. She had to have been very accomplished to receive that kind of clearance for that kind of job, especially being the first female. And I'm sure she dealt with a lot of scary, strange situations over the years, probably knows a lot of secrets about a lot of presidents. And it's just, it's funny, but also a little sad that that's what she's boiled down to when you search her online. Another thing I found about her is that she was very old school and even into the 1920s insisted on using horses as her transportation. So she still wanted to go in a carriage when she went out shopping and that kind of thing. So, I mean, again, sounds like a badass. She knew what she wanted. Okay, so several White House staffers were feeling this pressure of the thing, and they would, you know, be in a room like cleaning, scrubbing something, or cleaning a window, or retrieving papers from something for somebody, and they would feel this pressure on their shoulder, on their shin, and then they would turn around, and of course, the room would be absolutely empty. But one person, this is Helen Taft's personal maid, she reported not just feeling the thing, but She said she actually did see a figure emerge. It was wispy, again, to use that word, ethereal, but she did see a figure. And she said it was a young boy, like a young teenage boy, about 14 or 15 years old, with light hair and really devastated blue eyes. In his letter, Archie muses, "I can't imagine now who on earth can this be?" Taft was not happy about the rumors of hauntings in the White House. And Archie said that Taft banned anyone in the house from speaking of the ghost and threatened to actually fire people if they spoke of this ghost. So the president was, and like I mentioned at the early part of the episode, this precipice in his career. The Republican Party would go on to be split because there was such a crevice developing between two factions in the Republican Party. So very pivotal moment in his career. He's thinking ahead to re-election, and he's worried that if the news of a haunting in the Taft White House gets out, that's all that the headlines are. And he's probably right. I mean, newspapers were then and are now all about sensationalism. So he probably was right in being worried about that. Archie definitely, I think, could see both sides of it. Judging from the sort of tone of the letter, he definitely understands Taft's concern and the more serious side of containing this as gossip. This is only a guess. This is only alleging, but I imagine they probably were talking about the fact that women were seeing and talking about this, and probably just, you know, women losing their minds and being hysterical. Men said that a lot back then when women had opinions or notions or experiences. and so I think he understood the serious side of things. And then he also, I think he saw the humor in it as well. He says, quote, "I reminded him that the help was in such a state of mind that if it was positively believed that the upper floor of the White House was haunted, the servants there could not be kept in their places by executive order." Tone of humor there. Archie also said, quote, "I don't dare let any of them see how interested I am in it." He's admitting to his sister that he actually is intrigued by the thing. He wrote that he hoped that the ghost would sort of go away and the staff would let this go. It was causing Taft so much turmoil as Taft's sort of right-hand man, because he absolutely was his right-hand man. He was having to absorb a lot of that energy from Taft. So I think he was very ready for that energy to be gone. But he also mentions in the letter to his sister that he is, quote, "going to delve into the history of the White House." And this is to see if he could find any boys, young men that had lived in the White House, potentially passed away in the White House, that could meet the description of this quote unquote thing. It's never mentioned again in Archie's letters. Now, to be clear, I have not read all of Archie's letters. I haven't gone to the archive and combed through every single Archie letter. So I can't say definitively that it was never mentioned, but the sources I ran across for this said it was never mentioned again. So my guess is it was talk of the town within the walls of the White House for a little while, and it probably faded. I imagine he had a lot on his plate at this time, and probably not the time he wanted to follow up on something fun and investigative like this. The people in the White House also experiencing this, you know, historians that have looked at this, people that are interested in the paranormal that have researched this, can't really figure out who the boy could be. In some accounts of this, you'll see people make the leap that it is Abraham Lincoln's son, Willie, who died, I believe it was, the second year that Lincoln was in office. I think he died of typhoid fever, and he was 11. Willie was 11. And there's been a lot written about Lincoln and his relationship to his son that passed away and the deep depression that came from that, and heartbreaking story. So some articles, if you search all this online, will say that. There's absolutely no evidence to suggest that it's Willie. Willie's ghost is this whole separate thing in the story of the kind of haunted White House. And people do report seeing Willie in the White House as far back as the 1870s. But it seems like those are two completely different ghosts. So, you know, Archie never mentions it again. We don't have any other written sources for this, just sort of hearsay. And of course, Archie would very sadly perish in April of 1912 on Titanic. I just thought it would be so interesting to bring you this tidbit, this snippet into his life. I think it brings him more to life for us to see him, you know, a year before he passes away in these letters to his sister, interacting with Taft. So I was talking about talking with someone about this just today. We study Titanic and we forget how much life that passengers had and crew had before and after the ship. And I think that's what I try to do on the podcast. And I hope I've succeeded sometimes in illuminating just those little moments in people's lives that make them special and profound, because we are all profound in our lives. So there's Archie and the ghost. I wish I had more info, but I just thought it would be a fun Halloween tale to bring you. And it's no secret that Archie is one of my favorite Titanic passengers to study. His life is so complex. And I really am proud of the episode I did of him last season. So if you're interested, peaked, that episode is back in the catalog waiting for you. Happy Halloween. Couple of announcements. I do have mugs live, the Titanic Illustrated crew mugs, where you can get the whole crew illustration or individual officers. That is live. That's by a North Carolina artist named Sean McNamara. He's been so kind. And all of his info is in the show notes as well. And then sometime this week, I meant for it to already be up, but I'm swamped. Sometime this week also will be the Bruce Ismay mugs going live as well. So those are still through Bonfire. I haven't found a better solution as an independent podcaster for mugs. I'm just not able to do bulk orders quite yet. I don't know, maybe one day. So I am using Bonfire. Patreon members do get a little bit of a discount. So if you're a Patreon member, there is a code there. And yeah, I mean, if you're not a t-shirt person and you've been looking for merch, it's a fun way to have some Unsinkable merch and represent the podcast, you know, over your morning coffee or tea. And also it supports independent artists. They're both designed by just listeners of the show who happen to be amazing artists and reached out, and it's fun to collaborate. And I want to bring some attention their way as well. So those are live. Patreon bonus episodes are going to be moving to the first of every month instead of the last. I'm just going to work a little bit better with my schedule. I know it's only moving it by a day, but conceptually it's a very big deal. So that one that's going to start this month. So it'll be a day later than you're used to. Rate and review, please, please, please. I know, because I will tell you, the only time that I ever organically think to myself, I'm going to leave a review on the podcast, well, not the only, but most of the time, it's because a podcast I'm listening to has messed something up, messed a fact up, said something I don't agree with, and I feel, you know, angry, or I feel like the quality maybe has gone down. I feel like, unfortunately, as a human, that's how my brain works. I feel like I only jump to a review when it's negative, and I need to fix that about myself. That's not a good attitude to have about podcasts when I am a podcaster. But so I know the impulse is not necessarily to review the ones that you like, but if you do like this podcast and you have a minute, just a 5-star rating or a quick sentence goes a long way. In Apple Podcasts, that the reviews and the ratings, they create visibility within the app. So it helps the podcast so very much. So if you've been listening for a while and you've just never scrolled down and done that, anyway, I feel weird asking, but it just really, really does help the podcast and helps me, you know, keep it going and allows me to support my work here financially, which, you know, is a part of it, to be quite honest. And that's pretty obvious. I mean, I do Patreon, I do merch, so I'm not hiding that fact. And, you know, in terms of the podcast itself, I know that some of my scripted episodes have been a little bit more paced out as of late. I know that there hasn't been quite as much in-depth content and number of episodes this season as in previous seasons. Gotta be honest, I'm just swamped. I am, as some of you know, I'm working on my book right now. I'm working on some other projects. They're really crucial and important as a historian and just, you know, mom of 7-year-old and a 9-year-old and life. And it's a lot of it is for very joyful, wonderful, be in the moment reasons as a parent. And so I'm certainly not, I guess I'm a little apologizing. There's a little less content, but not apologizing for the reasons. They are very good reasons. I feel very fortunate to be this frenetically busy, be working on things, be just intellectually stimulated by so much. And obviously my kids always come first. So it's, that episodes might space out a little bit more. I never want to release an episode unless it's ready, unless I feel good about it. So you might see more interview episodes popping in your feed. Those are easier for me to do. They're fun. They're easier to edit, just in the spirit of full disclosure and honesty, which is, you know, what I'm all about. I wanted to kind of lay that bare and let you know that. I will, of course, keep you updated on everything I'm working on. And as other projects come together, as my book stuff comes together, I will be totally transparent, let you know what's going on. What else? Yeah, I do have a really good interview episode coming up soon with Veronica Hinkey. We already recorded it. It's about her new cookbook. And I'll try to find the time to tag a fun recorded like cocktail recipe or entree recipe to the episode like I've done with her episodes before. She's been on the – If my friend Angie is listening, look, there's some accent for you also coming out in another word. She has been on the podcast 3 times once this one airs. So she's definitely up there on her own as the three-peat, which is so fun and amazing. And I thank her for always being game. So look forward to that soon. And in the meantime, happy Halloween if you celebrate. Hope it's full of candy and spooky, scary things. Thanks, guys. Bye.